NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So, in der zweiten Stunde habe ich Studiogäste, und zwar The Ninth Wave aus Glasgow in Schottland. Und sie kommen gleich zu Wort. Nicht nur das, sie werden auch ein paar Songs bei uns live spielen. Da bin ich schon ganz gespannt. Aber wir fangen jetzt mit ihrer neuen Single an. Das werden sie nicht live spielen, sondern es ist jetzt die Studioversion von A Wave Goodbye to the People Who Said I'd Win. Das war A Wave Goodbye to the People Who Said I'd Win, die neue Single von The Ninth Wave aus Glasgow in Schottland. Und sie sind jetzt bei mir im Studio. Hi, how are you doing?
Hello.
Hi.
So, Hayden, Millie and Lewis, welcome to Hamburg. And you've been here for a few days already.
Yeah, we arrived on Wednesday to do our first show for the Reeperbahn Festival in Molotov.
Right. And you've had enough free time, leisure time, to go on the razzle?
I guess you could say that.
But you're not any the worse for wear and tear?
No, we're okay. Well, I've almost lost a tooth. I had to spend a day looking for a hospital.
You had a fight?
No, just a chip. I fry from McDonald's.
Really?
Got lodged in my tooth and my tooth came loose.
Really?
Yeah. So I spent yesterday.
It was just a normal McDonald's chip.
Yeah. Well, it was deep fried and it looked like it was 20 years old and it got stuck and lodged.
Well, that's not a recommendation of McDonald's, is it?
Yeah, no.
Don't have to blend all
lose your teeth at McDonald's.
I could sue them, make some money.
Ja, okay, die sind schon seit Mittwoch hier. Die haben schon einmal gespielt im Molotov Backyard. Und sie werden dann heute Abend spielen in Molotov, also auf der Hauptbühne. Und sie sind jetzt ja seit zwei Tagen hier, haben schon ihren Spaß gehabt. Allerdings hat Lewis das Problem gehabt, er musste zum Zahnarzt, weil er hatte beinahe einen Zahn verloren, weil er Pommes gegessen hat bei McDonald's. Und tatsächlich also ist so ein Stück Pommes stecken geblieben, sein Zahn. Und er hätte beinahe seinen Zahn verloren dadurch. Kann man sich gar nicht vorstellen. Insofern war es ein bisschen traumatisch, also der Einstieg zu ihrer Zeit hier in Hamburg. So, we've just heard the new single, and it's because you haven't actually made an album yet. Where is that deliberate that you're taking so long? Because you've been around for a few years now, and people have been talking about you quite enthusiastically for a few years already. And are you deliberately just kind of keeping everybody waiting? And so, or are you, is it kind of the idea you're working on this absolute masterpiece that has got to be absolutely perfect because you're going to make one debut album?
Well, we've just finished an album, so it's completely, it's been recorded and we're just now waiting for it to be mixed.
Okay.
So next year, 2019, there'll be an album or something coming out.
At the beginning of next year?
We don't actually know.
Okay.
We're not hiding it. We just actually don't know when it's coming out.
And is it the classic case of the debut album documenting your youth and so forth? And or is it not as simple as that? I mean...
The first two EPs... they were like songs that were written all at different kind of times and stuff, but this album, we wrote it for the album, all the songs. They were like, they've all came from the same time, the same place. So it feels more like a proper body of work, and it's all not like a concept album where it's all linked, but they're all similar sort of.
It's like a snapshot of a time in our lives of what was going on.
Yeah.
A theme.
Yes.
Okay. So kind of the youth and the childhood, that was more or less on the first EPs, and now it's the young adult life.
Yeah, it's all grown up a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so there's not going to be that many songs from the EPs on the album then, is it?
There'll be none.
None at all?
No. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, because often debut albums are just like basically the EPs, aren't they? Which people claim they never heard the first time around. You just put them on the album. Also das Debütalbum kommt tatsächlich endlich mal Anfang des nächsten Jahres vermutlich, oder auf jeden Fall 2019. Also ich habe schon die Band seit ein paar Jahren gespielt in meiner Sendung und ich habe immer auf dieses Debütalbum gewartet und es gab diverse EPs bisher. Und sie sagen, dass diese ersten EPs sind immer zu unterschiedlichen Zeitpunkten entstanden, die Songs aus ganz unterschiedlichen Zeiten. Und was das Debütalbum betrifft, es ist alles einheitlich eigentlich. Es ist alles quasi gleichzeitig entstanden, mehr oder weniger. Und es ist im Prinzip ein einheitliches Werk und sie sind auch schon sehr zufrieden damit. Und sie denken, es ist einfach so ein, es spiegelt einfach so ihr Leben wieder, wie es in der letzten Zeit einfach gewesen ist. And you're still resident in Glasgow, is that right?
Yeah.
Were you actually born and bred there? Or was it a case of getting to know each other at a later date at university or something? Or
we're all from there, but we all met through different ways. Hayden and Millie have known each other for quite a long time, I think, through family, friends and stuff. And I know Hayden through, I guess, gigs and stuff around Glasgow.
Okay, so you've known each other a long time.
Fairly.
So prior to the actual band being in existence.
Yeah.
Does that make it all the more surprising that you're actually here in Hamburg now and about to make the debut album? Does it seem like almost a shock to the system you actually made it this far? Or did you, were you so ruthlessly ambitious you knew it was going to get this far eventually?
We've all dedicated our whole lives to this and we do anything to make sure we can get as far as possible. But I guess thinking back, like if I knew that I was going to be in Hamburg promoting a debut album with Hayden, I would have been like, shut up, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to be in a band with him. But here I am, and I love
it. Okay. You haven't regretted it so far?
No, not yet. Definitely.
And you're already thinking in terms of longevity.
I hope so.
Yeah. Is that too early now? You do cover Interpol songs, so kind of paying tribute to bands who've stuck around for ages.
Yeah.
Still thriving, yeah. Ja, die sagen, dass sie, ja, die sind in Glasgow geboren und aufgewachsen und sie kennen sich schon seit Ewigkeiten, schon bevor es die Band überhaupt gab. Und deshalb ist es vielleicht so ein seltsames Gefühl für sie jetzt, dass sie wirklich zusammen sind in einer Band und dass es so weit ist, dass sie in Hamburg sind und sie machen Promotion quasi für ihr Debütalbum bereits. Und Melly meint, wenn man ihr das erzählt hätte vor ein paar Jahren, dass es irgendwann so weit wäre, dass sie wirklich zusammen in einer Band wären, die vielleicht sogar wirklich erfolgreich werden könnte, die hätte das gar nicht geglaubt. Aber sie ist froh, dass es so weit gekommen ist. Sie haben wirklich alles getan, um das umzusetzen, weil sie sind schon sehr ehrgeizig und es ist ihnen einfach sehr, sehr wichtig. It's interesting because I think what you said about being really determined to actually make it and dedicating so much time to what you do and being so passionate about it is, that's what the music sounds like, because it doesn't sound half-hearted in any way. You know, it always sounds very fresh and very enthusiastic, as if, you know, how can you keep up that momentum? That's kind of, as a listener, you get, you know, it's like, yeah, there's nothing, there's no short change about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's the impression I get.
I guess it's just because a lot of the songs are, well, all the songs, they're not things that are made up. It's just like we mean what we're singing about and stuff, and the songs all mean something, I guess.
And we spend a lot of time recording them and getting them right. Yeah. We don't just go into the studio for a day, we go down for a month and make sure that.
Yeah, it does sound meticulous what you've done so far.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've remixed a few songs, but it wasn't really necessary. I mean, the other versions were good enough, really, yeah. I would have thought. But, you know, so, so you're not lazy characters. You're not.
No, definitely not.
You're not going to be turned into slacker rockers.
No.
Wish.
No,
okay.
I don't think that's possible in our style of music.
No.
No, okay. No, obviously not. No. You simply have to change the music. Yeah. Die sagen, dass sie tatsächlich sehr leidenschaftlich dabei ist und sehr überzeugt sind von dem, was sie tun. Und Hayden meinte, dass ein Grund dafür ist, dass es alles echt ist, was sie machen. Also die Songs sind authentisch. Also die Songs bedeuten alle was. Sie erzählen irgendwelche Geschichten, die wirklich mit ihrem Leben zu tun haben. Insofern, sie bleiben sich schon damit treu, weil es um ihr Leben geht, ihr gemeinsames Leben und das künstlerisch zum Ausdruck zu bringen. Und dann sagt Lewis dann auch, das geht auch darum, dass sie sehr, sehr liebevoll sind und sehr motiviert, wenn es darum geht, wirklich die Songs ganz perfekt hinzubekommen. Also die scheuen sich nicht vor der Arbeit. Und es gibt so Remixes von Songs und ich bin der Meinung eigentlich, dass die Originalversionen eigentlich gut genug sind, aber die sind einfach Perfektionisten und die wollen einfach alles ganz genau hinbekommen, also wie es sein sollte. So you're going to play a track for us live now. The first one you're going to play is Sometimes the Silence is Sweeter. And that's going to appear on the EP, which is meant for Europe.
Yeah.
But for you, it's an older song already, isn't it? And is it a song, were you choosing this as the first song to play? So, I mean, is it a song which is of particular significance to you, or?
It isn't necessarily an older song, but it is one of the first songs we recorded when we went down to Bath to record the new set of songs.
Okay.
And it's like, highly emotive.
I don't know what else to say about it.
Okay. Ja, also dieses Lied bedeutet ihnen schon sehr viel und es ist einer der ersten Songs, die sie in Bath aufgenommen haben, in so einem Studio in Südengland, als sie angefangen haben, also dort dann neue Songs aufzunehmen. Und es ist ein Song, der sehr emotionsgeladen ist und die wissen gar nicht, was sie noch hinzufügen sollen. Aber es ist jedenfalls ein Lied, das ihnen sehr viel bedeutet und das spielen sie für uns jetzt live. Es ist also The Ninth Wave aus Glasgow in Schottland mit Sometimes the Silence is Sweeter.
Ooh. know that they can come here anyway. I'm falling onto deaf ears, and they insist that they will always be there to catch the voice as it falls down to a cushion of faces turned around. I'm falling onto deaf ears, and it will be fine just as long as I know. But sometimes the silence is sweeter. Sometimes the silence is sweeter. Sometimes the silence is sweeter. And when they never get here, this feeling only sticks for a little while. Am I better off without them? Am I better off without them? And sometimes the silence is sweeter. Sometimes the silence is sweeter. Sometimes the silence is sweeter. And sometimes the silence is. Sometimes the silence is sweeter. And sometimes the silence is sweeter.
Okay, das war die Live-Version bei uns beim NDR von Sometimes the Silence is Sweeter von der Ninth Wave aus Glasgow in Schottland. Hayden, Millie and Lewis von der Band sind bei mir in studio. Well, thanks very much for that live track. And you were saying about recording in Bath. When is that where you were working with this guy who produced the Pixies?
Yeah.
Okay, Dan Austin, yeah. So was it interesting meeting somebody who was as well-known as he is? I mean, did you find it overwhelming, or was he just unassuming? Or
well, I think we all thought it was going to be a big, scary producer man with sunglasses and a Mercedes-Benz, but he's really not that. He's like a 6'2" lovable bear.
But he's a what?
Lovable,
a lovable bear. Right, okay, yeah.
But he's worked with us from the start when we didn't have a clue what we were doing, and he's just done our new album as well, so he's kind of like part of the band in that way.
Okay.
I feel like he is like quite a big inspiration to us. Like, he brings out a lot of our creativity, and I don't think we'd be the same band without him.
Okay. He just manages to actually to log into what you do, more or
yeah.
less, and make you manage to full to realise your potential, you think?
Yeah, yeah. He like properly understands what we're going for with the music as well. So it's good to have someone that's on the same mindset.
So you do notice the difference in quality when you're just working on your own, just doing like demos and stuff, and then working with him. Did it seem like a massive difference?
Yeah, it's pretty insane. We have like, because we've worked with them so much now that we have routines of what we do when we have a demo, and then we do pre-production for the song, and then we go upstairs and then we do the drums, and we all have this like, it's now like a, what's the word, when you have a factory and it has a conveyor belt.
Yeah,
the song's basically a conveyor belt now, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not wasting a lot of time.
Right. Do you think there's a danger of getting too dependent on somebody like that who's older and more mature and has got so much knowledge? I mean, do you feel in some way almost as if you have to rely on him now, or would you be able to get on with him, get on without him?
It's definitely not a dependence. I think he's taught us a lot of things that we can now use by ourselves and make us better.
Okay. And it's important, of course, that he believes in what you do as well. I mean, so he's a big fan.
Yes, yeah.
Is one of these producers obviously has like a fan relationship to bands? Or
yeah, I mean, he's recording another band in Glasgow just now, and he would just text us and ask us if we want to go out to drinks and stuff, like when he's done working. So it's like just like a friend, I guess.
Actually quite matey.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And is that an important part of how you actually started to thrive as a band? Can people know about Glasgow being a great place to go out at night? And it's not exactly a boring place for a Saturday night, for example. But
yeah.
I mean, do you think that kind of energy did actually rub off on the band to actually give you a sort of momentum? Do you think if you'd just grown up in a sleepy little village, maybe you wouldn't have had the motivation to actually get around to what you're doing? I mean, it's a cliche, this idea of, you know, the prestigious city with all its reputation and stuff. And do you think, did it actually help you?
It does, and it also helps that it's not an expensive city to live in or grow up in. You can pretty much do anything you want on a very small wage. So you don't need, it's not like London where you have to
have a really high wage.
Have a really high wage or work 10 times as harder because there's another 10 bands looking to do exactly what you want to do. I feel like in Glasgow, everyone has their own, there's like your own area. Mm-hmm. And you kind of can thrive in your own area. And everyone who's in the other areas join you and help you.
It used to be the case. I remember going up there years ago where everybody seemed to be friends with each other. I mean, all the bands seemed to be friends with each other. There didn't be any kind of competition at all.
Yeah, everyone completely motivates each other. We all want each other to do as good as we can.
Yeah. Because I remember it was like just the opposite to what you experienced in London at the time of Britpop, you know, where everybody hated each other. And they just were hoping that the other band was going to fail miserably with their new album. And you went up to Glasgow and everybody was so really nice.
Yeah,
I think because it's such a diverse place, so you're not really like in direct competition with anyone. So there's not really any reason to be like to hate anyone.
Yeah, there's not like five ninth waves in Glasgow.
Yeah, okay.
I guess that's...
So nobody started nicking your sound yet?
Not yet.
We'll see how you react when it gets to that. Maybe it's over and done with the friendliness then. Yeah, okay. Ja, Sie haben mit einem renommierten Produzenten schon gearbeitet, Dan Austin, der unter anderem The Pixies produziert hat. Und er hat jetzt das Debütalbum produziert, das jetzt schon bereits fertig ist. Es muss noch abgemischt werden. Und das war eine sehr wichtige Erfahrung für Sie, weil er ist ein sehr guter Produzent und auch ein sehr netter Mensch. Und Sie waren ganz begeistert, also wie bescheiden er war und wie freundlich und verbindlich er war und überhaupt nicht von oben herab. Und Sie haben sehr viel von ihm gelernt. Und Sie haben nicht das Gefühl, dass Sie von ihm abhängig sind jetzt, obwohl er sehr viel geleistet hat eigentlich, was den Sound betrifft. Sie denken, dass Sie einfach sehr viel von ihm gelernt haben, dass Sie im Prinzip ohne ihn in der Zukunft klarkommen könnten. Aber es war einfach ein sehr... sehr hilfreich, so viel von ihm dann zu erfahren und von jemand, der einfach so lange dabei ist. Und sie sind richtig befreundet miteinander jetzt. Im Moment ist er in Glasgow unterwegs, er produziert eine andere Band und er ruft die dann an und fragt sie, ob sie abends dann zusammen vielleicht einen trinken gehen können. Und Glasgow ist dafür bekannt natürlich, dass es ein sehr lebhafter Ort ist und sehr freundschaftlicher Ort. Es sind sehr nette Menschen da, die sich gegenseitig unter die Arme greifen. Das ist schon immer der Ruf der Glasgow Musikszene. Und Sie haben bestätigt, dass das immer noch so ist. Es hat sich daran nichts geändert. Also kaum Konkurrenzbewusstsein, gar nicht eigentlich. Die wünschen sich alle nur gegenseitig alles Gute und sie versuchen sich zu helfen, soweit es überhaupt möglich ist. Und es ist auch kein Vorteil, dass es günstig ist, da zu wohnen. Die Mieten sind niedrig. Man braucht nicht so viel Geld, um dort zu überleben als Musiker. Und es ist tatsächlich so, dass sie einfach sehr froh sind, in diesem Ort sein zu können. Und es ist auch überschaubar, auch wie viele Bands es gibt. Sie meinen, es gibt nur eine Band, die wie The Ninth Wave klingt. Insofern gibt es nicht irgendwelche Bands, die in Konkurrenz miteinander so stehen könnten. So, you're going to play another live track for us now, which Flower into Wounds. Right, so that's a very interesting sounding title. I'm sure it's as interesting as it sounds. any kind of... You want to elaborate on the significance of this song and the meaning of the song?
I think it was the last song we wrote, or like one of the last songs we wrote for the album, and this is the first time we've ever played it live. Wait, I don't think we've not played it as a full band yet. We've only practiced it acoustically.
Okay.
The song itself is kind of...
Talk about the chorus, because
yeah, you talk about it.
What the song's about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
You got the headphones from that book?
Yeah. I was reading a book called Crash.
Sorry?
A book called Crash by...
Cold Crash?
It's called Crash by J.D. Ballard, I think. It's a book about people that deliberately crash cars and then they get off on it and... Have you heard of it? Nah.
No, they deliberately crash cars.
Yeah, and then like
and find it kind of inspiring, or whatever.
Well, they like shag each other after they've crashed and stuff. But there's a part in it where like he's been in so many car crashes that his body was flubbering into wounds.
His body was what?
Flubbering into wounds.
Oh, I see.
So I just thought it was an interesting kind of thing, but yeah. Changed the meaning of it from like a physical thing to like so many bad things have happened, and then you just get more bruised and feel worse about things.
Mm-hmm,
so
okay.
not so much a physical thing.
No, I understand, yeah. Okay. Ja, dieses Lied heißt Flower into Wounds und es ist inspiriert worden von einem Buch, das Hayden gelesen hat von J.D. Ballard, Cold Crash. Und die Handlung handelt davon, wie es Leute gibt, die absichtlich Autounfälle verursachen und sie finden es irgendwie aufregend und sogar sexuell aufregend. Und es handelt von einem Menschen in diesem Song, der so viele solche Erfahrungen gehabt hat, dass er allmählich dann wirklich auch seelische Wunden davon trägt. Und es ist auch das letzte Lied, das sie bisher geschrieben haben. Das war das letzte Lied für das Album. Im Prinzip, es ist sogenannt, also ihre letzte Komposition eigentlich. Sie haben das noch nie live gespielt. Und es ist ihr erster Versuch jetzt für uns. Es ist also Flower into Wounds. Live eingespielt für uns von The Ninth Wave.
Is it too hard to look at me? Is this too hard to watch? The possession of the ending, the one that never stops. I'll keep up my performance, I won't let it slip. Another way to lie. It goes on and on and on. It's all I'll have to stay the same. It goes on and on and on. It's all I'll have to stay the same. As everyone runs frantic, as a flower into wounds. Everyone runs frantic, as a flower into wounds. Tired eyes, an answer I lie bereft, another way to lie, another way, another way to lie, another way, another way to lie, another way, another way, as everyone runs frantic. As a flower into wounds, everyone runs frantic. As a flower into wounds, everyone runs frantic. As a flower into wounds, everyone runs frantic. As a flower into wounds.
a flower and so once everyone runs frantic as a flower and so once.
So das war The Ninth Wave mit ihrer Live-Version von Flower into Wounds, das auf dem neuen Album erscheinen wird, das nächstes Jahr erscheinen wird. Do you actually know the title of the album yet?
We haven't announced it, so I don't know.
You haven't announced it yet?
No.
Okay, it's a bit top secret still, okay.
It's still top secret.
Yeah, it's no problem, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What about role models? Do you like talking about role models, or do you like to pretend you haven't got any? You know, it's obviously nice as a young musician to think, well, we're hugely original and innovative, and we haven't consumed any music in our youth at all. But, you know, that's obviously not realistic. And is it something that you're conscious of, or do you not really, do you try not to be conscious of it, or how do you cope with that kind of scenario? You know what I mean?
Do you mean like musicians? Role models, or does
anyone... I mean, well, music that has influenced you, you think, where people you've looked up to when you were younger, for example, and this, it's always a fine line of trying to make your own mark,
mm-hmm.
and on the other hand, admiring so much what somebody else has possibly done, yeah. you know, that it, you can be influenced by them. And people tell me various things, you know, sometimes they try to ignore the fact, or don't try to think about it so much, because they don't want it to get the overhand, they don't want to get carried away with it.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they cut themselves off from other music for that reason,
mm-hmm.
for about 6 months.
Yeah.
So they can forge their own sound.
Sometimes I catch myself copying how a song, not like a song structure, not like a song notes or anything. I catch myself doing that with a few bands I don't want to say, because...
No, it's okay.
But, yeah, I catch myself copying how songs are structured and how everything's kind of placed and balanced in a song, but I don't know if that's a bad thing or not, or that's just how everyone
does it.
That's
learning your trade more than anything. Yeah. Probably more than anything else, isn't it? Yeah.
I think it's good to recognise like that you do have role models, and because everyone does have inspirations, but people take different things from different people. So, like when I was like maybe just turning 13, my like biggest role model was like Sky Ferreira, because she was like forced into like pop industry, and she was just like, no, you know what, this actually isn't who I am, and just went completely in an opposite direction and just did it for herself. I just thought that was amazing. I was like, that's what I want to do. But then growing up, I was like surrounded by like Kate Bush and PJ Harvey and everything, and so it's
well, that's a better fit than Sky Ferreira.
Yeah, definitely. But it was that first thing of being 13 and being like, wow, you can actually do something for yourself. And I mean, so. But then obviously I've taken that from her, but then for people like music role models.
Yeah.
Like Kate Bush and Peter Harvey and everything.
I think it was a moment in time where you can put your finger on where you actually felt like you were finding your feet in creative terms and actually think, well, this is our recognisable sound. Was it just a moment of enlightenment, or was it, it's just been a gradual process where you can't really piece that together again?
It's probably after we finished the first EP. I remember thinking, well...
The Reformation EP?
Yeah. Because everything we'd done before was obviously not to the same par, and then we'd been working with Dan, the producer... And then I guess we sat down and listened to it, and it was suddenly like a real band for the first time. So, and that's when you first know you have a sound, I guess.
Right.
That was the first time for me.
Yeah. I'd say it's also evolved quite a bit, and it evolves every time we, even like write a new song and demo it and stuff, and like we just introduce a lot of different, like along the way there's been a lot of different things. Like Lewis is now using a lot of... like drum modules and stuff instead of playing a drum kit. There's a couple of
drums and German modular drum stuff.
Yeah. There's a couple of songs without any guitars at all as well. It's like we're just not being afraid to try things that we're like not used to, or like not maybe not as comfortable with.
But it still always sounds like us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Testing your own boundaries, in other words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And trying to push the music forward, yeah. Okay. Yeah, also Lewis hat auch gesagt, dass er keine konkreten Vorbilder in dem Sinne hat, aber er erwischt sich schon manchmal dabei, wie er irgendwie bekannte Songs dann irgendwie sich genau merkt und einstudiert, also wie die Songstrukturen sind. Und dass er dann, wenn er selbst irgendwas komponiert, das ein bisschen vielleicht an der Songstruktur von jemand anderen ein bisschen kopiert oder nachahmt ein bisschen. Das er hat sich schon dabei erwischt. Aber er versucht nicht wirklich so an konkrete Vorbilder zu denken eigentlich. Und Millie hat auch gesagt, dass sie ist ein bisschen deutlicher geworden. Als sie 13 war, war sie ein großer Fan von Sky Ferreira. Und sie hat sie so bewundert, wie sie dann Sky Ferreira als ganz junges Mädchen es geschafft hat, in der Musikbranche zu überleben. Aber jetzt, als sie ein bisschen älter geworden ist, hat sie andere Vorbilder gefunden, wie Kate Bush oder PJ Harvey zum Beispiel. Und das passt natürlich auch viel besser zu dieser Band The Ninth Wave. Und Hayden meinte, dass für ihn geht es einfach darum, dass sie immer versuchen, schon originell zu sein, ein eigenes Ding zu machen, immer wieder neue Experimente zu versuchen, ihre eigenen Grenzen zu testen. Songs zum Beispiel komplett ohne Gitarren aufzunehmen, irgendwas, was ihnen ganz ungewohnt ist, um zu gucken, was sie dann irgendwie hinbekommen können. Right, so the next track you're going to play for us live is from the Never Crave Attention EP, which is an EP that I didn't actually get for some reason. The first EP was promoted here and the second EP wasn't, so don't ask me why that went wrong. It did. So this is new track for me, We Can't Go Anywhere Else, from the second EP.
Yeah.
And was the second EP more worrying in a sense than the first EP? Because like the first EP is always the first flush of youth, isn't it? And the second EP gets a bit more serious. And did you have any self-doubts at any stage when it came down to that kind of period where building up, in other words, the final phase of making an album?
I think by the time it got to recording the second EP, we were like, we really wanted to record it because we knew that it was a step up from what we'd already done. And then the same with the album as well. But I don't think we had any doubt about what we were doing anyway. Don't know about how it's going to do when it gets released, but
yeah, but you feel self-assured in a wholesome kind of way.
Yeah.
Without getting too carried away.
Yeah.
Okay. So das nächste Stück, das wir uns live spielen werden, heißt We Can't Go Anywhere Else. Das ist von der zweiten EP, Never Crave Attention. Und ich fragte die einfach nur, ob sie vielleicht ein bisschen unsicher waren zu diesem Zeitpunkt, weil es allmählich ernst wurde. Die zweite EP ist natürlich schon irgendwie bedeutender noch als die erste EP, weil jetzt wird's ernst, jetzt müssen sie mal gucken, ob sie wirklich eine Karriere schaffen können. Und sie waren eigentlich schon immer relativ sicher, dass sie das Richtige tun und dass sie gut genug sind, um das zu schaffen. Und Hayden hat es auch als eine natürliche Steigerung gesehen. Und so sehen sie auch das Debütalbum letztendlich, eine Steigerung von dem, was sie vorher gemacht haben. Und sie stehen dazu. So, wir hören jetzt die Live-Version, eingespielt bei uns beim NDR von The Ninth Wave, von We Can't Go Anywhere Else, von ihrer zweiten EP, Never Crave Attention.
Chest is bare, no word of care. I'll try again, but I can't leave here. Oh, to lay bare to it all. Only ourselves to blame. We should have gone somewhere else to lay bare to it all. We should have gone somewhere else to lay bare to it all. Hushed affairs, constant stares, a constant need to be aware. I'll try again, another friend. another means to an end. Oh, so lay bare to it all. So lay bare to it all. To go somewhere else. So lay bare to it all. Should have gone somewhere else. To lay bare to it all. We should have gone somewhere else. To get aside. We should have gone somewhere else. To get out of sight.
Okay, thank you. Das war We Can't Go Anywhere Else von ihrer zweiten EP Never Crave Attention in the Ninth Wave. Bei mir im Studio sind immer noch Hayden, Millie und Lewis von der Band. And the music is obviously has a natural kind of energy about it. And are you just energetic by nature? I mean, is it kind of like, do you wake up in the morning and before you brush your teeth, sing a song kind of thing? And, is it something where you actually have to get into the mood to be that energetic? Or is it something, do you just feel like you're... That's your normal
life?
Temperament. Yeah, I just mean as people, as human beings. I mean,
not in the morning. No. 2 hours to wake up.
I'm trying to think, like, on a day of a show, what it's like. Shows are very stressful. And then, let me think what actually happens.
Like, listen, it could be, like, it will be like anything, like, depends on the day and depends where we are, but when we go on stage, then it's like I've had a cold for like 3 weeks, and but then as soon as we get on stage, it like disappears. Somehow. But like the same for moods and stuff like that.
It's okay.
But as people, I think no one's got major mood swings,
yeah.
And we spend almost every day with each other, so there's no underlying craziness.
Okay.
We're all kind of like this all the time. We don't really put on a show when we're on a radio.
Yeah, nothing's going to be good if it's forced. I guess it all just comes naturally.
Yeah. And of course, I think what's interesting that it's because it's energetic, there's something very uplifting about the basic sound of what you do, but it's obviously at odds sometimes with the lyrics, which can be quite dark as well. So, it obviously, it still doesn't sound like it contradicts itself. So you're being uplifting and dark at the same time. Which is, well, that kind of fits to your mood swings, possibly, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm recognising your problems, but dancing about them at the same time instead of just sitting in your room crying. I just make a good thing out of a bad thing.
If we all played piano, it would be pretty depressing.
Yeah.
Like, if we didn't have drums and guitar.
Yeah, okay. Ja, ich sagte, dass die Musik einerseits ganz erbaulich ist, weil sie so energiegeladen ist und energisch, andererseits sind die Texte auch ziemlich düster. Und das passt aber zu ihrem Temperament, weil sie schon sehr, sie haben schon Stimmungsschwankungen alle. Also die sind nicht immer nur glücklich und gut gelaunt. Die sind nicht immer gut drauf. Und deshalb so diese Mischung entspricht tatsächlich ihrer Persönlichkeit. Und Millie sagt auch, dass es einfach wichtig ist, dass wenn man Probleme hat, dass man irgendwie dazu, dass man irgendwie als Therapie, dass man quasi es kann eine befreiende Wirkung haben, wenn man es natürlich musikalisch umsetzt. Sie redet davon, wie man dann tanzen sollte, wenn man Probleme hat und wenn man irgendwie deprimiert ist. Und das ist eine gesunde Weise, um damit umzugehen. Und das ist im Prinzip die Art und Weise, wie sie dann mit dem Leben umgehen. Und ihre Musik spiegelt einfach ihre Persönlichkeit und also ihr Leben einfach wieder, wie es dann ist. Did you, before you actually started the band, did you actually have many common experiences as such where you think these common experiences helped you bond to make it more effective being in a band together? Or was that, we weren't that intensely kind of together as friends, as people when you were younger?
Common experiences, and I think all of us started playing music really young and have been playing gigs since we were, I've been playing gigs since I was 10.
10?
Yeah, Hayden's been
but
playing.
But you're allowed to play gigs in Glasgow when you're 10.
Yeah. Church halls and stuff. Hayden's been playing since
seven.
Mm. Well, playing gigs since you were seven.
Well, like, we not like in the mall at all, but, yeah. But like,
first, going on tour.
Going on tour at seven. No, it's like in front of school friends and stuff.
Right,
and
okay.
Halls of your school or church halls or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, understand.
But, I guess that's the thing we have in common. We've all started music young. We haven't came into it.
So you were 10 and you were 7.
How old were you?
How old were you?
Oh my gosh. I've been playing in like symphony orchestras and stuff since I was about, like 8.
You've been playing in symphony orchestras?
Yeah, well, I was originally classically trained and then I decided to switch for that, and absolutely not.
Well, I mean, if you say originally trained, I mean, you can't no longer be classically trained. You still are classically trained now.
Yeah.
Well, I should forget
it. I know what you mean. Yeah, but you've just decided to have a different shift of emphasis.
Well, I learned like classical piano and classical percussion, and it was really fun. But there's a difference of standing behind an orchestra of about 100 people, clashing a pair of cymbals together, and being one of four people on stage in front of an audience of hundreds. It's a different feeling.
Yeah, so how old were you when you were playing in a symphony orchestra? Is it in Scotland then?
Mm-hmm. So I was playing from the age of about 8 up until I was 18. And then
okay. And then you started this band? Straight, yes, from the symphony orchestra? So. Okay.
I guess there was a bit of overlap, and then I slowly faded out of the classical world into this. Rock and roll.
does the symphony orchestra now feel rejected by you now?
Oh, they've moved on. They've moved on.
So you split up with them. Can you split up with them? Symphony orchestra.
I still love you, symphony.
Okay. Ja, was ich nicht gewusst habe, Millie ist also hat eine klassische Ausbildung als Musikerin genossen. Sie hat bereits als Kind im Orchester gespielt. In Glasgow, und sie hat also klassisches Klavier gelernt und Perkussion, und das hat sie gemacht schon als sie 8 war, 10 Jahre lang, bis sie 18 war, und dann hat sie sich für ein Leben von Rock'n'Roll entschieden mit The Ninth Wave, und sie meint, es ist natürlich kompletter Wechsel, aber sie fühlt sich einfach wohler jetzt, and you don't regret having made that decision as yet?
As yet, no. I love it. I love this whole industry and these people.
Okay. Ja, sie hat es bisher nicht bereut, also diese Entscheidung getroffen hat. Also das ist ein spannendes Leben, und sie freut sich einfach sehr darüber. Okay, right, to finish off, you're going to play a cover song.
Yes.
And it's by Interpol.
It is.
So you obviously like Interpol.
Yeah.
Well, you're too young, really, to have known Interpol from the word go. I mean, you must have heard them retrospectively.
Yeah, I was like 8 when the first album came out.
Right, okay.
That was when I was playing gigs.
Oh, of course, yeah. You were already doing Interpol covers at the age of 8. So is it a band where, obviously, it's like a common denominator, you're all into Interpol?
Yeah, there's not that many bands that we're all into as well, so this isn't that special.
So are you kind of unconditional fans, where you think all the albums are great, or you've got your favourite albums, or... Or you're disappointed by a new album, or does that happen or not?
Yeah. I haven't really dug too deep into the new album, but I like the singles, but I've heard a few people saying it's not as great as the other ones, but whatever.
Personal opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. We won't get into that, though. We could go on all night about Interpol. Right, so you're going to play Rest My Chemistry,
yes,
which is not necessarily one of their most well-known songs.
Yeah.
So is that deliberately? the case that you're not taking one of the main hits?
I think why we're doing it is because I wanted to do an Interpol cover and a note on guitar, and I'm the drummer, so I was like, let's just do that one.
Okay. So wir hören jetzt zum Schluss eine Coverversion von Sie für uns live einspielen von Interpol, und zwar das Lied Rest My Chemistry. Und es macht Sinn, dass Sie eine solche Coverversion gemacht haben, weil es ist eine Band ist, die Sie alle mögen. Und das macht natürlich auch Sinn. Es gibt nicht so viele Bands, bei denen Sie diese Gemeinsamkeit haben, dass Sie die alle gleich toll finden. Aber in diesem Fall, Sie sind ganz große Fans von Interpol, und Sie spielen für uns jetzt Rest My Chemistry. Here's the Ninth Wave wieder aus Glasgow. Well, thanks very much for coming down.
No problem.
And for playing for us. And,
thank you very much.
Yeah, and I hope you carry on having a good time in Germany and elsewhere.
We shall.
And good luck with the debut album.
Thank you very
I'm
much.
I'm sure it's going to be absolutely huge.
I hope so.
I'm sure it will be. Okay. So wir hören jetzt Ihre Version von Interpol's Rest My Chemistry.
Slept for 2 days, I've bathed in nothing but sweat, and I've made hallways, scenes for things to regret. And my friends, they come, and the lines, they go by. Tonight I'm gonna rest my chemistry. Tonight I'm gonna rest my chemistry. My life in cocaine, just the rage and three kinds of yes. And I've made stairways, such scenes for things that I regret. Oh, those days in the sun, they bring a tear to my eye. Tonight I'm gonna rest my chemistry. Tonight I'm gonna rest my chemistry. But you're so young, you look in my eyes. You're so young, so sweet, so surprised.
So, das war die Live-Version, die Cover-Version von dem Interpol-Song Rest Your Chemistry, live eingespielt für uns by the Ninth Wave aus Glasgow in Schottland. Und das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Basketball. Meine Studiogäste heute waren die Ninth Wave, Hayden, Millie und Lewis. Und zum Schluss haben wir ein Stück jetzt von der letzten EP, Never Crave Attention, und zwar New Kind of Ego. Gute Nacht.
NDR Info Nachrichten.